It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Indeed. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Go over to Facebook. We've got a lot of important information there as well. Give us a like. It is Wednesday, and Wednesday is Wings Day at Hooters Restaurants. You buy 20 wings, you get 10 for free, and that's all their wings. They have the great smoked wings, their original, the boneless. So be sure and check that out. Go to order.hooters.com. It is Wednesday. It is Wings Day. So
you know,
there you go.
Kim,
there
I don't. You know, the Geico Camel doesn't come every week. But I asked him to come in today because, you know, what those Monday holidays do? They mess up your entire week. So it was important to know that today is Wednesday.
To keep people on track. So, yes, it is Wednesday. A very important show planned for you today. We'll be talking with Matt Durkin in the second segment. He is a candidate for district attorney in Jefferson County. These races are so, so important. And that is why we are introducing you to these district attorney candidates. And then in the third and fourth segment, Penn Fiffner, who is the chairman of the Tabor Committee, which is Tabor is the Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights. It's an amendment that is in the Constitution. Penn is also a former legislator and founder of Construction Economics. And apparently, Steve, you're not going to believe this. You are going to love this, is that Governor Polis and the legislature are thinking about doing some emergency taxes. Do you think Mr. Executive Order might try to do some emergency taxes? Wouldn't you love that?
This guy's getting to be very entertaining because he seems to be on the track to being a one-term governor.
Well, I tell you what, we need to continue to shed light on what is going on. Why do we need the legislature? Why do we need these people that we are electing to represent us if, in fact, we've got just Mr. Executive Order who's just going to go ahead and rule by executive order?
I think I said to you yesterday, can you imagine, and there's got to be, you know, they're not going to make themselves well-known. But people on both sides of the aisle who are saying, what is the point? Why am I here? If this guy's going to do it all, I'm going to hand my resignation tomorrow.
Well, we don't want that to happen because elections are so important. But we, the people, need to do what our part to rein this whole thing back in. And that means we need to be active in elections. So as we have these candidates come on the show, you need to make sure that you're learning about them, learning about the issues. You know, one of the things that there's been this whole brouhaha regarding mail-in ballots. And apparently President Trump said that it many times has the opportunity for fraud. And we know it. There is ballot harvesting. Colorado has a very high participation rate regarding people that are voting. But I would submit to you it has a very low voter rate on people actually knowing the issues, how they're going to affect them, and what these candidates stand for. So what if you vote if you don't know what the heck that you're voting on? And if you don't know what you're voting on, then you have a civic responsibility not to vote until you actually go out and have learned about the candidates and the issues. And will these issues, will it, they enhance freedom? Or will they use force? Will they give these elected representatives the permission, if you will, to use force? Now, you know, we talk about the rule of law all the time in America, Steve. The rule of law, it is something that is sacrosanct. But that law, we need, I think, need to change it. It needs to be the rule of constitutional law. So when we talk with Penn Fiffner, here in Colorado, there's an amendment to the Constitution that basically says to PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, if you want to raise our taxes, you just need to have the good manners to ask for our consent, to get our permission. But instead, they've redefined a word. They, instead of a tax, they call it a fee. Same thing. Government's taking money out of your pocket. But when they call it a fee, they don't have to have the good manners to ask you, Steve.
Yeah, that was a trick that was well learned, I guess. And that goes around the country. I know other states have the same issue. And it's, in a way, it's diabolical. You've heard me express it many times. I firmly believe that very few citizens have the full picture of how much money is being taken out of their pocket.
True that. I think that's something that we need to talk about, because between your property taxes, your sales taxes, your fees, it's pretty significant. And so we'll continue to shed light on that. I think that Michael Fields over at Colorado Action Rising, that they are going to have a ballot initiative that says that any new fee, which if it raises revenue over a certain amount, that actually has to be voted on by the people. So I think that's going to be on the ballot this November. That's going to be very important. And the reason fees was not in this initially is because library districts came and said, oh, you know, if we have to raise our fees for late books or whatever, we don't want to have to go to the people to vote on that. And the people that put together Tabor said, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But then anytime you give just a little gray area there, you can be assured that people that want to get more of your money are going to figure out how to use that to do that. So this is going to be a really important conversation with Penn Fiffner here in the third and fourth segment. Now, my friends, as we are looking at what is happening in Colorado and in America, Rudyard Kipling says, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And so I think, I have not gotten to the inspiration or the funny the last few days. And I think that I need to do that, Steve.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, you right? You get it. It's not the inspiration that I'm anticipating as much as it is the quote unquote funny. Go ahead.
Okay. Ron Paul was born August 20th, 1935. He's an American politician who served as a Republican member of the U.S. House of Representatives for a period of time and who unsuccessfully ran as the 1988 Libertarian presidential candidate. He later sought the Republican nomination for president in 2008 and 2012, and he is the father of Senator Rand Paul. And he said this, he said, one thing is clear. The founding fathers never intended a nation where citizens would pay nearly half of everything they earn to the government. That, and you know what, I'm sure it is. When you look at all of the different fees and taxes, I bet it is at least half that goes to government. And really, government should, I think it should be able to survive on about 10% of people's income total, all in, 10%. But I think that 50% number is probably pretty close to true, Steve.
Don't you love the point counterpoint of what's actually happening? Take that quote that you just, stated, and then put it side by side with Bennett and his health agency that he wants to create.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, more government.
And I was on that call yesterday. So we're going to do the funnies really quickly. And actually, I took something and then I added my own take on this. So here you go. Are you ready?
Oh, boy.
Okay. Restaurants, bars, and taverns collect state, county, and local taxes. Now they're the watchdogs that people wear masks and physical distance. And by the way, when the local health department says that it's okay, they will also get to sell some of their food and wine.
Yeah.
Okay. So yesterday, I was on the call. We mentioned, I've got to go back and make sure that you all know this. Due date too late. Go to due date too late. Today is really the last day to sign that petition. And you can go to, I've got to get it right here. Where do I have it? Okay. I think it's 120.coloradokidsfirst.org. And make sure that you have, that your signature was taken. And if in fact that your signature was rejected, go to one of these signing places today and sign again. We want to make sure that this gets on the ballot. Colorado is one of the few states in the country where we actually could, or somebody could actually do an abortion right up until the day of birth. That's why they call it due date too late. And we want to get this question on the ballot so that hopefully we can. It's just cruel. The baby can start to feel pain, we know for sure, at 22 weeks. And so we want to get rid of that here in Colorado. And at least we want to ask the people of Colorado about that. So be sure and sign that. Yesterday, Senator Michael Bennett had a town hall, which I listened in on. Jason Crow, who is a representative from CD6, as well as Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, are proposing what they're calling a national health force, where they would hire hundreds of thousands of people to go out and contact, trace, quarantine, all this on this whole COVID-19 reaction, I would say. Now, I talked to a health professional last week, and he said, yes, there is a coronavirus, COVID-19, and it's not fun to get. Most people do survive. You're going to be sick for maybe about 10 to 14 days, but most people that get it then do go ahead and they recover. So, Steve, what the radical activists are doing is they're using this COVID-19, and you're still seeing all the headlines of all this fear about all these people that died. And we had Representative Mark Baisley on yesterday, where we realized that the numbers are being massaged. So when you have everybody say they're looking at the data, but we know that there's garbage in the data, but then they're using the data, now they want to put this into the next stimulus bill. $100 billion that they're going to pay people to go out and contact trace. This is going to be getting close to a police state, Steve. And that is pretty darn scary. And actually, Jen Hewlin, she did something up for me, and I edited it just a little bit. But we've got this little flyer that I'm handing out to people. Why not just wear a mask for others? And in it, we say, if you aren't feeling well, a mask can help trap a sneeze or cough. Okay. Number two, the WHO says there is no evidence that wearing a mask can protect healthy people from the coronavirus. Number three, wearing a mask makes you touch your face more often, making you more likely to get the virus. Number four, I love this because haven't we had all the environmentalists say that we want to try to limit the amount of CO2 that people are breathing? But when you put on a mask, you're breathing in your own CO2, and it could be harmful after a short while. Number five, the virus is so small that wearing a mask, a cloth mask, does nothing to stop the virus from getting through. Number six, if you fog up your glasses and make it dangerous for you to drive or walk. And number seven, wearing a mask is a Class 4 felony while carrying a firearm in some states. So the final on this little flyer says, wear a mask if you want to, but please be respectful if someone else chooses not to. The science does not support wearing them. Let's build herd immunity instead of herd mentality. I made that one up, Steve. What do you think of that?
Now that's good. That's very clever. Well done.
Ha-ha. Ha, thank you so much. Hey, you know what? Let's go to break. When we come back, Matt Durkin is on the line. And Patty had pulled, you know what? I haven't said thank you to this great team yet today either. Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all you listeners, I really appreciate you. Patty had pulled this, these statistics. Memorial Day is always deadly in Chicago. It is just, it's astonishing. And there was, once again, a very bloody weekend in Chicago. And you're not seeing that trumpeted across the headlines. You're not seeing the death tolls running along the side of your television screen. Why is that? We want to keep our community safe. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Matt Durkin. He is a candidate for district attorney in Jefferson County. It is so important for us to be able to thrive and flourish that our communities are safe. This is Kim Munson. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. On the line with me is Matt Durkin. He is a candidate for district attorney out here in Jefferson County. And these district attorney races are so important. And George Soros has been playing big time in district attorney races for the last few election cycles. George Soros put over $1 million into the last Jefferson County DA race, and he knows that they're important because we have district attorneys in the towns or cities that that his candidates have been elected, that they kind of choose which cases to prosecute and which not to prosecute, which actually can affect public safety. Matt Durkin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim, for having me on.
Did I set that up pretty well? Is there anything you want to add to that?
I tell you what, you said it perfectly, and in fact, your lead into the commercial was yet another example of a George Soros DA in what they have done to their community. Chicago is literally a war zone, and I think you had mentioned that this most recent weekend was yet another example of that.
Yeah, there were 49 people that were shot, and 10 of them fatally. And it looks like the statistics are rising significantly. It says between January 1st and May 24th, the nation's third largest city had 200 homicides compared with 176 during the same period last year. The number of shootings have climbed from 679 to 826. And you want to say, first of all, where is the outrage when we see all of these statistics regarding the coronavirus along the side of our TV screen? You know, people are concerned. We know that. Where is the outrage on this, though, Matt Durkin? And as you mentioned, this is where we have a George Soros DA. And so when you look just under the surface here, the community is getting less safe. And it wasn't that safe to begin with. And for people to be able to live their lives, to have their businesses, you have to have the rule of constitutional law. And we can see the effects of this, and that is why your race is so important, Matt Durkin.
Absolutely. So in Chicago, George Soros installed the DA there, Kim Fox, and you've just gone through all the statistics. And in fact, that community is primarying her. She's up for reelection, and there's, I think, three Democrats who are challenging her, and they're saying the same things that we are, that she has destroyed the community. And if you recall, the mayor there was threatening people who went outside to arrest them as she was letting criminals out of jail. So we have seen the disastrous effects that George Soros has on these communities.
You know, Matt, you refer to the mayor there of Chicago, and I saw that video where she was talking about COVID-19 people that might have, I'm not sure if it was tested positive or what it was exactly, but she said, we will come and we will find you. And my gosh, the coronavirus is a cousin of the common cold. And it is astonishing to me that we've got these elected officials that are talking about putting together, for example, a national health force where they would go find people and quarantine them. Instead of making sure that our communities are safe, where people can thrive, they can work, they can go to their jobs, they can create businesses. I mean, we have in this election cycle a big decision for people to make. And so tell people why you, Matt Durkin.
Well, I tell you what, the same things that are happening in Chicago are not too far away from us here. And the Denver Police Department has reported through this epidemic or whatever this has been, Crime in Denver has been up 14%. Burglaries have been up 54%. And in fact, just the other weekend on May 16th, Denver police responded to 4 shootings, 2 stabbings, and 1 stolen car crash in a 12-hour period. And sadly, more recently, in the middle of May, a DOC, a Department of Corrections prison inmate that was released early from his conviction for aggravated robbery was arrested for the murder of a 21-year-old woman who was found in an alleyway. So you have really hit it on the head, Kim, that these races are tremendously important. Our communities are at risk, and they're just too important to turn them over to George Soros DAs. And so that's why I have been fighting for our community here in Jefferson and Gilpin counties my entire career for nearly 25 years. And that's why I'm not going to go down without a fight here.
And I know that we've talked about it before, but it has been a bit astonishing to me that because of the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, that we have actually been letting criminals out of our jails and our prisons. But you said that in your office that you work in the district attorney office, that you are looking at this with a very thoughtful approach. So it's a bit astonishing, though, that this guy got out and went ahead and then killed a 21-year-old. I think that she was a mother of 2. I saw the picture of a beautiful girl. And I wonder if they're counting her as a COVID-19 death. That's just a side thought there. But, you know, tell us a little bit about what's going on with the jails and prisons and how you guys are looking at these cases.
Yeah, so throughout this entire time, the staff at the First Judicial District Attorney's Office, which is Jefferson and Gilpin counties, we have been working around the clock. We have been working from homes. We've been working from our office. We've been going to court, and we have been analyzing each and every case that comes through and each and every case that we already had to make sure that we are doing what we can to protect public safety during this time, which that is why every time a case is called, they ask for a bond reduction. And we take a thoughtful approach to each one of those cases. The difference with this case is that the Department of Corrections, the prison system in Colorado, was basically given kind of a blank check by Governor Polis to release those folks they feel are appropriate in the community. And on this case, even Governor Polis said that they had made a mistake.
Well, you think?
Sure.
So let's see. I lost my thought and train of thought on the next question regarding. Oh, gosh, Matt, go ahead, because tell us the next thing that you'd like to say, because I had so many things going through my brain as you were talking there.
Well, there's just a lot to consider here, and here in the Jeffco DA's office, we're trying to reopen. The concern that we have is that there has been months and months and months of cases that are just been continued. We already had high caseloads to begin with. The crime rate has continued during this shutdown, and the courts have been operating at a fraction of what they used to operate on. So where we used to have dozens of cases set for a particular day or dozens of cases set in a couple of weeks or months, we now have hundreds of cases. And that's why we need the Colorado legislature to step in and provide some relief on speedy trial. We need some help because we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases that are set for just even trial.
And you know what, Matt Durkin, thank you. You read my mind, because that was my question, was actually what is happening over on the court side with this shutdown. So in essence, through this shutdown, we basically have shut down much of the prosecution of criminals, which that probably can't bode very well for safe communities as well. So that's one of the reasons why we're seeing these crime statistics go up. So there's a lot of extenuating things that have happened with this COVID-19 that people haven't really thought about. So Matt Durkin, your final thought, and how can people help you out? Because these races are so important. Step up, you know, give these candidates at least the price of a cup of coffee. Every little bit helps. So how can people help you, Matt Durkin?
Well, I tell you what, Kim, I appreciate everything you're doing for our community here, and that's what we're doing here in the First Judicial District. People can go to durkinforda.com. That is durkinforda.com to contribute, to volunteer. We need to get through this thing together. We need to get through this shutdown together, and we need to win this election together in November.
Okay, Matt Durkin, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
Thanks, Kim.
Okay, Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. The market had a very happy day yesterday.
Boy, it was very strong, and the S&P and the Dow kind of tried to catch up with the NASDAQ a little bit by breaking above resistance they'd had for the last few weeks. You know what's interesting, Kim? The NASDAQ right now is only 5% off of its all-time high. I mean, it's almost like none of this ever even happened. As far as the NASDAQ is concerned right now, it's kind of like just a little tiny pullback. Isn't that something?
You know, it's really interesting. And the NASDAQ, explain that to our listeners. That's really more like what would you say, kind of not necessarily smaller companies, but they're not like the big caps like a Dow Jones Industrial. So explain what the NASDAQ is exactly to our listeners.
Well, sure, Kim. Yeah, the NASDAQ, is a lot of larger cap stocks as well. They just tend to be more geared towards higher growth, you know, like your Apples, Microsoft, Facebook, Netflix, Costco's on the NASDAQ, many others are. And I don't know that this is necessarily true anymore. You do see some higher growth companies that choose to list on the New York Exchange, but the Dow is 30 stocks. It used to be a lot more like industrial, less growthy. But now you have tech stocks that are in the Dow as well. So they're not as different as they used to be, but the NASDAQ still contains a much higher mix of higher growth type stocks, technology, biotech, those type of things, Kim. When the NASDAQ is acting well, that's usually a good harbinger for the market itself, for the rest of the market.
Okay, so, you know, it's so difficult sometimes to pick a particular stock. Some people like that, but there's like mutual funds that would have these higher growth stocks in it as well. Jason?
I'm sorry, Kim.
You sound like you're a little bit under the weather. You doing okay?
Yeah, just a little bit of hay fever this morning. I'm all right.
It's not COVID-19, is it?
No, I don't believe it is. I'm too ornery. The virus would have to fight me off.
And good luck on that one. So just kind of the last question. If people, if it's 5% off of its high, you know, we've had discussions about what to do about that. But I think what that could mean is that the NASDAQ is looking into the future and saying it sees growth. It's pretty happy about that, yes?
Yeah, and it also is probably saying, okay, if things are going to change and people are going to work from home more now, and there is some, you know, let's call it permanent adjustment, a lot of the technology companies are going to be there to address that. Personally, I kind of feel like with this straight-up moonshot that we've had with the NASDAQ, it might not be the worst thing to think about taking some gains if you have them. It might pull back a little bit and rest before it, you know, ultimately goes to new highs. It might not too, but looking at the chart, Kim, to me, I'd think about taking some gains if you got them.
Okay, well, I would recommend if people want to take a look at their portfolio, if they've had some gains there, to give you and your colleagues over there at Presidential Wealth Management a call. Phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And then our landing page together always has great information there at airpresidential.com, airpresidential.com. Jason, you take care of, I know it is hay fever season. So you take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Okay, have a great show, Kim.
Okay, thanks so much. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Penn Fiffner about this kind of this rumblings underneath that, I don't know if Mr. Executive Order or the Colorado Legislature might institute emergency taxes. And how could that work when we have Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights? We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll have a conversation.
Predovich and Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich and Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich and Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich and Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich and Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. It's kimmunson.com. All the show recaps are there, all kinds of important information. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. Comes out on Sundays. It has a lot of important information, op-eds in there, as well as our podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. And on the line with me, I'm really pleased to have Penn Fiffner. He is the chairman of the Tabor Committee. And of course, Tabor is Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights. He's a former legislator and founder of Construction Economics. And we've heard that there's this possibility that Colorado, it's either the governor or the legislature, or maybe they're colluding together, not for sure, but they might try to institute emergency taxes because we've lost so much revenue during this COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. And how would that match up with Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights? Penn Fiffner, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Kim. Thanks for bringing up this important topic.
It is very important. One of the reasons that I think that Colorado used to boast a great economy was because of Tabor, which was an amendment that was passed into the Colorado Constitution by the people of Colorado, about 25 years ago, that says to PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, if you want to raise our taxes, you just need to have the good manners to ask us. Now, there's some other things in there as well, but that's one of the big parts of Tabor. What else would you like to our listeners to know about that particular part of Tabor, Penn?
Well, when it comes to emergency taxes, the left has been talking up the idea that since Tabor has a section that anticipates that you could get in trouble as a government and face something that's unexpected and a real emergency, that therefore the left can just walk in and say, let's hike taxes. And in fact, I've even heard speculation that they'll try to impose the ballot measure issue pretty much on through this part of Tabor. And what is important for your listeners today is to start understanding how they push back on this, because the General Assembly has really got itself in a box, and I don't think they can take advantage of this emergency taxes because of the problem that they've put themselves into.
And the problem is what, the reaction to this virus or what?
No, we're going to go to the part of the Constitution that says before you can implement emergency taxes, you have to deplete the emergency reserves. So we need to note, first of all, what these emergency reserves are. And this is where, if you'll indulge me for just a minute, I think a small story would help to give an idea of what we're facing here.
Okay,
imagine
please.
two couples with reasonably good incomes and increasing salaries, and they take different paths. The first one says, you know, we've heard that we should have 4 to 6 months of savings just set aside, if at all possible, to handle any emergency or unexpected situation. And so these people are careful with their money. They spend a little less. They don't go out as often and so on. They really husband that money and are good stewards of it. And they put some aside every year until they build up a nice little emergency nest egg. Then you compare that with the second couple in this parable, and that couple spends everything that comes in, and when somebody's, you know, when they come to the issue of should we be setting some money aside, they say, oh, we've got equity in our house, who cares? Then a crisis comes up. So, Kim, of those two households in this story, which one is ready to handle a problem?
Well, it certainly is couple number one.
Yeah, and that's the analogy I want to make here to what has happened in Colorado, because it's a very similar situation. So the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights was written in a very comprehensive way, and it is more than just voting on whether taxes go up. And very intelligently, it anticipated that at some point the state would have to face problems. And it says every government, so not just the state government, but every government in Colorado, down to, you know, the school districts and the counties, and even down to library districts and cemetery districts, have to have 3% set aside as emergency reserves. And as far as I know, at the state level, those emergency reserves have been dipped into just one time. You might remember back, I think it was 2002, the big Hayman fire, 137,000 or something acres burned up just south and west of Denver. And that required spending out of the emergency reserves, and it was replenished. But when you and I talk about reserves, when your listeners talk about reserves, the logical conclusion would be those reserves have to be like our first couple that has set money aside in a savings account. It has to be money you can get to, either cash or near cash, something that can be liquidated, can be turned into cash very quickly, like a government T-bill or something. Now, here's where you're probably going to fall out of your chair, because the state government has said that a huge portion of its emergency reserves are these assets. They are buildings. Kim, they have designated the emergency reserves as buildings. We're talking about there are six buildings that are both north and south of the Capitol along Sherman, plus a parking garage. When you face this situation where you're saying, well, we've got to spend all of our emergency reserves first before we can get to emergency taxes, what are they going to do? The analogy I gave you is weak in this sense. That is, the second couple that spent wildly, put nothing aside, but had equity in their house, these days could probably get a second mortgage, could get a loan on that equity relatively quickly. But Kim, can you think of any way that you can take six government buildings and a parking garage and turn that into cash real soon?
You know, this is fascinating, Penn, and I'm going to ask you a question. I served on city council for 4 years in Lone Tree, and there was something that was called certificates of participation that many times you'd have politicians and bureaucrats use to access money from assets, and that actually, I think, was an in-run around Tabor. Is that related at all to what you're talking about right now?
Well, it could be. In other words, if you had somebody who says, you know, some legislator here at the state level saying, let's go ahead and deplete these assets by taking a loan against the buildings, then COPS would be your the certificates of participation, otherwise called COPS, would be about the only avenue they would have, because the alternative, which would be far more honest and direct, would be to go to the voters in November and say, we want to take out this debt and use it against these buildings. Well, it'd be just as easy just to ask for a tax increase at that point. But certificates of participation, so that we remind your listeners what these are really bonds. They look like bonds. They behave like bonds. They are sold, essentially, as, in your case, you mentioned loan for you, municipal bonds. We've also had COPS for state facilities. The difference is this, that where Tabor says any multi-year financial obligation has to go to a vote of the people, these COPS really dishonestly say, look, we'll sell a 20-year bond, but once a year we'll ask whatever legislative body, whether it's the state legislature or a town council, to authorize payment for the next year. So the principal and interest in us, so you've got a sinking fund set up, you've got principal and interest going into it, would be voted on once a year by the legislature. And then magically, you see, the courts have said, well, that's okay, because you could have a legislative body say, yeah, never mind, we won't pay the rest of our bond. Kim, you and I know how silly that would be. It would ruin the credit standing of whatever government issues these COPS and then doesn't pay them back. But that's how they might do this. So the upshot of all this gets back to my first statement. There exists the provision within Tabor for emergency taxes, and we need to talk about those here relatively soon, about how you would go about doing an emergency tax. But the first hurdle to overcome is this statement that says emergency tax revenue shall be spent only after emergency reserves are depleted. So you would have to take the total reserves, which are $385 million. Let me say that again, $385 million of reserves, of which almost half is in buildings, and the rest has been designated as existing cash funds. So you could go in and say, well, unclaimed property for the promotion of tourism, that can be turned into this reserve. In other words, our state government since 2003, I guess, has been not keeping faith with the Colorado citizen. It has not been putting money aside in this savings account for what's necessary and should be available in case of a situation analogous to what we're facing now.
Okay. Hey, Penn Fifner, let's go to break. When we come back, let's continue this conversation. I think the analogy between the two couples is an important one, and so we'll continue on with that. I'd like to chat with you a bit about the fact that Governor Polis has kept a bunch of this relief money. And so let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Penn Fifner.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. The show from yesterday with Steve Ryder and Mark Baisley, a riveting show. You might want to go back and take a listen on that. And today is really the day to make sure that your signature was accepted, or if you've not signed it, for the due date too late initiative to get that on the ballot to basically say we're not going to be doing late term abortions in Colorado anymore. And late term means right up to the day of birth. Go to 120.coloradokidsfirst.org and put your name in, and you can see whether or not your signature was accepted. Mine was not. And so I did sign another petition, and at go to duedatetoolate.com, and you can find out where you can go sign a petition today. So that's really, really important. And I have on the line with me Penn Fiffner. He is the chairman of the Tabor Committee, former legislator, and founder of Construction Economics. And Penn, producer Steve has a question for you. We were talking about all this important information you're bringing forward. Steve, what's your question?
Well, Penn, obviously we know the way the politics works today is to go out and gain control of the narrative to kind of persuade people to see what's going on, whether it's real or not. Could we see the current governor painting some kind of declaring some type of fiscal emergency to maybe try to justify some type of an increase?
No, not unless he's going to violate the Constitution. The Taxpayers' Bill of Rights anticipated that governments at all level might say, well, we've got an emergency because we don't have enough money. So when we talk about what would happen if somehow they could get around this issue of depleting the emergency reserves and tried to set up emergency taxes, the first hurdle they have to get through is that Tabor very specifically says what an emergency is not. And an emergency excludes economic conditions and revenue shortfalls. So you can't, the governor or the legislature can't turn around and say, you know, we just don't have enough money, so we're going to impose these emergency taxes. They have to be spent on the emergency. So I would say that the General Assembly would be violating the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights if it tries to spend money on things like backfilling for health reinsurance or school district spending or things like that, which are normal and everyday expenditures. What the emergency taxes would have to go for would be direct responses to the COVID-19 situation. So obtaining protective supplies, testing stations and material, the overflow hospitals. Those sort of things would fall under the emergency taxes. So we'll try to have something up on our website specifically about this. So the Tabor Committee and its sister organization, the Tabor Foundation, they have slightly different missions, have a website, thetaborfoundation.org, and we'll try to get some of this stuff up there so that people can start pushing back. And, of course, we'd love to have involvement from your listeners. If they say, you know, we want to protect Tabor, we recognize that it takes a lot of volunteers and the like, they can They can reach out through the TaborFoundation.org and offer their assistance. So the governor cannot, Steve, just do this emergency. And in fact, there's a fairly high bar for setting up something that would work with these, that would lead to emergency taxes. So specifically in the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution, it says for these emergency taxes to be imposed, a two-thirds majority of each House has to vote. That's as high a bar as you're going to find to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot. Two-thirds of each House would have to vote that indeed there is an emergency and the emergency taxes would then be opposed. And then there are some other restrictions that go along with these rules.
Okay, Penn, a question here is that because of the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, which government basically came in and shut down people's businesses, and of course, sales tax is very important to municipalities and counties and to the state, shut all that down, and people are hurting. People have lost their jobs. They've lost a lot of their revenue, and the idea that then government would come in, the state of Colorado would impose more taxes on people who, because of their policies, you know, their revenues have gone down. This almost seems cruel to me, Penn Pfiffner.
Kim, this is where you and I hold a worldview that is very different than what the left sees. The left has talked as if the services that are supplied by governments are more important than anything else, and that we can just leave it to the families to try to adjust for this, that families and businesses are really of lesser importance, and that first thing that they want to do is protect and even increase the revenues that the government would get. After all, one of the biggest threats that we face as citizens in Colorado for this ballot year is the possibility that on the ballot in November will be a $2 billion, with a B, $2 billion tax hike. It'll undo a lot of what Tabor protects and launch government into a much bigger role. And as you say, that money has to come from families, that have to come from around the kitchen table figuring out how to spend more on taxes and less on everything else. And yes, that's cruel.
Well, and you know, the other thing as you were talking about this, Penn, and we just have a couple of minutes left, is we can see this this attitude actually, where we, the politicians and bureaucrats, basically, they've continued to have their jobs. They've not given up their jobs. They've not given up their pensions, which, again, it is everyday hardworking people that are, you know, are working to provide that. You may not have heard the quote-unquote the funnies at the beginning of the show. It's not that funny with the fact that our small businesses, our bars and our restaurants and our taverns actually, you know, people have gone out. Many of these are small businesses. They've risked everything to start these businesses, and they have to, A, work for the government because they have to collect sales tax. Now they have to be enforcers where in some of these different municipalities, they have to make sure people are wearing masks and measure how far people are apart from each other. Even to get your hair done in Denver, they take your temperature. That's not what people are supposed to do that are out there creating businesses. So, Penn Pfiffner, what's your final thoughts on all this?
Well, Kim, if there is any silver lining, perhaps it's a reminder to citizens and to people who are supposed to represent the citizens that if you don't have a strong economy, if you don't have a good tax situation and plan, that you're going to ruin everything for everybody. Not only are businesses in trouble, but then both local and state governments don't have the money that they're used to having to operate. And I think if anything comes from this morning's discussion, I would hope it would be a reinforcement of the idea that the legislators of anybody, from the smallest governments to the state government, have got to keep faith with the people And when the people say through the Constitution, through the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, you will have an emergency reserves, kind of a rainy day fund for emergencies, that they should listen, they should do the right thing and put aside the money, not play these games by designating buildings as a savings account.
Well, Penn Fifter, thank you so much. An important conversation. We'll continue this as we get closer to election time. I so appreciate you being on the show. And that website is thetaborfoundation.org, thetaborfoundation.org. Penn, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Kim. So long.
Okay. And our quote for today is Ron Paul. He says, "Don't steal. The government doesn't like the competition." So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Riding high, through the mountains, climbing, twisting, turning, further from my home. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce, through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell